Welcome to episode 525 of the Entertainment 2.0 podcast, brought to you by thedigitalmediazone.com. I'm Josh Pollard.
And I'm Richard Gunther, and this is the show that puts you in control of your favorite movies, music, shows, and games. And Josh, how are you?
You know, I'm doing pretty well, but I was looking through our show notes tonight, and I thought back to the beginning of the pandemic and how we had more news than we expected that we would have, and it all seemed to be really good news.
Yeah.
And that is not going to be the case tonight.
No. We were talking about how video services were making stuff available for free, and streaming was getting cheaper. And yeah, it's kind of all of the opposite tonight.
Yeah. Services going away. Yeah, there's a lot of bad news here, but there is some good stuff. It's not all bad news. So maybe the worst news of all is that we don't have any feedback to talk about this week. Because and that breaks my little heart.
Oh,
so not really. But we love hearing from all of you. So let us know any questions you've got or any feedback from this week's show so that we can talk about it next week. All right. So no feedback. So we'll get right into the news. And while it's almost entirely video news, there's one video-ish story that we're going to feature. I think this is a pretty big deal, and I'm hoping that Richard remembers some of this from way back 6.5 years ago, January 2020, when he went to Las Vegas for CES. and although, you know, knowing you, probably not, because you barely even go to Central Hall anymore. And actually, I don't even know if Vizio, that's who we're about to talk about.
Vizio doesn't show. So
yeah, I think they only do private stuff, don't they? Jerks. Okay. Well, I'm still excited about this news. The TVs that Vizio did show off in private, and I think they had a press conference, but again, it seems like so long ago. They're available now, like starting today, June 30th, they're apparently available now. And these are pretty impressive TVs. There's a couple of aspects to them that I think are especially impressive. It's basically the features that they have and the fact that the vast majority of these features are available across the entire product line. So what are the features that I'm talking about that I care about here so much? HDMI 2.1, variable refresh rate, which I think can only be done with HDMI 2.1. On some of these, the variable refresh rate goes from 45 hertz up to 120 hertz at 4K. That VRR is AMD FreeSync, so it'll work with your Xbox or an AMD-equipped computer. They have EARC, the new version of audio return channel. They have low input lag modes, and of course, they have HDR. And like I said, all of those features are on every single set.
Every line.
Being released this year. Yeah, all of them. From the lowly V series all the way up to the P series Quantum X. And we're not really going to cover it here because it's not available today. But they also announced their OLED sets and the pricing for them. And they're also dirt cheap, like $1,500 OLED. That's crazy.
Nice.
So the P-Series Quantum X, that's the top model for their LCD sets. This thing will do 3,000 nits of peak brightness. Now, peak brightness means it's just in a small area for a short period of time. It's not 3,000 nits of brightness across the entire TV set for 10 minutes straight, because, well, that would hurt. But it'd be kind of cool.
It'd be like those torture videos that you see where people are like forced to watch with their eyes propped open to like see these bright images on the screen.
Right. But So it's 3000 peak, but it'll do 800 nits of full screen brightness. So that's still pretty bright. I'm not sure how that compares to some of the other newer TVs like from Samsung and Sony, but that's still pretty stinking bright. And those are available in three sizes, 65, 75, and 85 inches, from $1,500 to $2,300. So that's still really inexpensive for a top-of-the-line TV.
That's really good. I mean, $2,300 for an 85-inch television. I want an 85-inch television, Josh. I just don't have room for it.
Yeah, that'd be kind of cool. So one step down is the P-Series Quantum. That one does 1,200 nits peak brightness. I didn't see a listing for the full screen brightness, but it does, you know, one of the things that Vizio's been doing for a while is lots of zones for local dimming. And this one will do 240 zones of local dimming.
Nice.
The more zones, the better, a lot better, because if you don't have enough zones, then you end up getting really big halo effects and stuff like that when you've got like a really bright area that's surrounded by darkness, like street lights and stuff like that. So you want more and more of these because it means they're smaller and smaller and you get less of that halo effect.
Yeah, and you just can't get those blacks, like the blacks in something that has, like, the more zones you have, the closer you get to that true black look with an LCD.
Right. So the P-Series Quantum, those are going to be available as 65 and 75 inches for $1,200 and $1,700. Again, really good prices there. The next line down, and this is really the more, you know, this is the mid-range, kind of the sweet spot, the M-Series. The Vizio that I bought, I think it was a 2016 model, was the M-Series. The M-Series Quantum, if you buy it from Amazon, they're actually going to have two versions of the M-Series. One of them is Amazon only, and that's the one you actually want. And because it does 90 local dimming zones. If you get it anywhere else, it's like 30. And like 30 is still decent. But yeah, I don't get it.
What? That's so weird.
It is weird. I don't really understand why they did that. But just two different sizes there, 55 inch and 65 inch. These are $550 and $750. These are fantastic TVs. A 55 inch awesome 4K TV with all of those features for $550. There's also the V series. It's the low end stuff. I don't need to get into the specs there. But just to give you an idea of how inexpensive this stuff gets, you can get a 40 inch V series. And again, all of that HDMI 2.1, variable refresh rate, HDR, all of that stuff for $230. That's insane.
It is insane. But what comes with that in terms, like, you know, we were talking about dimming zones. Is this just like one light plate behind it?
Right.
Probably. I mean, it probably is, right?
Yeah, probably.
And
yeah,
is this 4K? Because on a 40 inch, why do you even care?
They've been making 40 inch 4K sets for a while.
That's just ridiculous.
I know multiple people in my office that use 40-ish inch 4K TVs as their computer monitors.
Okay, that's totally legit. I get that.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. So that might make sense. I don't know all of the specs. Like, I would kind of have a hard time buying a $230 4K 40-inch TV. I mean, that really only makes sense as a computer monitor. I don't know where I'm going to put a 40-inch monitor. You know, that's too small for most other places. But gosh, like, how cheap is that going to be at Black Friday? Like $130, $150?
Yeah, who knows? I mean, yeah, that's nuts. It's nuts.
So one of the reasons that I'm excited about this and why I think a certain segment of our audience should be really excited about this is, as we keep talking about, this is the year that we're getting brand new game consoles. And a lot of these features really matter for gaming. Like, they're kind of going after gamers with these sets. With the low input lag, that's huge. Having that variable refresh rate is huge because it eliminates screen tearing for when the console isn't able to output at 60 frames per second. So those two features alone are a really, really huge deal. And I don't think I've talked about this on the show, but although it would fit into what's going on in my entertainment center. This computer that I'm sitting at, it's got an HP gaming monitor hooked up to it. It's technically a gaming monitor because it does have super low input lag. It does have AMD FreeSync, but it's not anything extra crazy. It's still only 1080p. I now do about 90% of my gaming here at this 24-inch monitor.
Really?
As opposed to my 55-inch Vizio M Series 4K HDR TV.
Wow. I was wondering why your Xbox was there.
That's why. Because it makes... So that Vizio looks gorgeous. So if I'm playing a game where speed and stuff doesn't quite matter so much, yeah, I would rather be out in the living room. But if I'm playing Call of Duty, the input lag, especially with HDR on, is terrible on that TV. Mm. And for a while, I was like, I just suck. Like, I'm bad. I know I'm bad at these games like Call of Duty, and I'm old, so my reactions are just slower. But I decided to give it a try, and I notice a difference. I absolutely do better when I'm playing on this monitor. Mm. And it's got me very much considering buying a new TV. And these are absolutely some TVs that I would consider getting in the fall.
Cool.
So the TCL 6 series, I'm very curious what the latest ones are doing there, because for the last few years, those have really been like the, you know, mid-range TV to buy in terms of picture quality and low input lag. So I wonder how they stack up to these new Vizios, because, you know, I've got a 55-inch Vizio now, 55-inch for $550. That's not bad.
Yeah.
So if you're considering a new TV to go along with your new console, maybe check out these Vizios.
Cool.
Okay, so that was some good news. Now we're going to get into a bunch of bad news. Sorry.
Yeah. Here, we'll sum it up for you. Prices are going up. Stuff's going away.
Yeah.
Moving on. No.
Yeah. So let's just skip all of it. No. Let's not do that. That wouldn't be good. Okay. So the first story is YouTube TV. The cost of that service is going up. And you might think, okay, fine. Like, these go up. They always go up a little bit. A little bit. This is not a little bit. The last time they increased their rates was April of 2019, so it's been more than a year, which is nice to finally see them lengthen out the amount of time between the price increases.
Yeah, although I would argue that even that is a little bit too soon, but whatever.
But it's kind of in line with what most of the other services have been doing, except for Hulu, who seems to be just raising it constantly.
Right.
So it's going up by $15 a month. That's a dramatic increase.
That's 30%. It's currently, what, $50?
Yeah.
So it's going up 30%.
Yeah. It's bonkers. Yeah. It's now $64.99 a month. And if you're signing up tomorrow, that's the price you're paying. If you're a current customer, basically it's your next bill. That's what you're going to be paying. They kind of apologized in their release statement about this. Like, we know that, I don't remember their exact words, but it felt weird. Like, what, don't apologize for this stuff. Like, you're doing it, just own it and let's move on. They did say that they tossed this little nugget out there. There's a quote that said, "We're committed to continuing to innovate our service," and here's the important part, "and offer flexible options to members in the future." What do you think those options might be?
Maybe it's, I don't know, the thing that everybody has wanted all along, which is the ability to select individual channels, or maybe groups of channels, and not have to just get these big bundles of things. That's what I think that they're probably trying to get to, because you have to assume that the reason for these costs are the rising costs that they're paying for all of their sources.
Yeah, it is. So they pretty quickly shot down the idea of pick all of your own channels. They said it's we can't go a la carte because when we purchase access to these channels, the networks force us to bundle all of them.
Because licensing.
Right. Right.
Because that's what it always is. Because the providers are basically jerks about it. It's like, you know, you can't have ABC unless you also get Freestyle and all this other crap from them that most people don't care about.
Yeah. Or the ABC is a really great example because you don't get ABC unless you also get ESPN. And ESPN is pretty much the most expensive channel that they offer.
And you don't get that unless you also get the Disney channels and all of that. It, like, you have to base, as a carrier, you have to pay for all of it, whether your customers want it all or not.
Right. Right. So, yeah, I think that while we're not going to get a la carte, which I don't hear as many people nowadays saying they want a la carte as people used to, and I still don't think people actually do, but having some package options would be nice, because maybe you don't care about all the sports channels or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, even if they can just kind of bring it down to provider, right? Like, maybe you don't want all the ABC stuff. Maybe you don't want all of the CBS stuff. Like, if they could let you pick which group you want that way, it would be much better if they could do it like you were just saying. Like, I don't want sports channels. I don't care about sports channels. Why am I paying for ESPN when I am never going to watch it?
Right, right. So I don't know exactly what that would look like. Maybe it ends up looking more like Sling with their orange and blue and stuff like that. And that would probably be good. But right now they offer over 85 channels. And this price increase comes also on the same day that they're launching a whole bunch of new channels from Viacom CBS.
That's not at all related, I'm sure.
Absolute coincidence, I'm sure. So the new channels they are getting: BET, CMT, Comedy Central, MTV, Nickelodeon, Paramount Network, TV Land, and VH1. And then coming at a later date, BET Her, MTV2, MTV Classic, Nick Jr., Nicktoons, and Teen Nick.
Okay.
If I was a YouTube TV subscriber, I could do without all of those channels. I don't care about any of them. None of them.
Yeah, I would like to get CMT and Comedy Central, but I could probably live without them both. I also like having Nick Jr. and Nickelodeon. Yeah, I mean, again, I could live without them, but I like having them.
Yeah. Well, and so Handsome Rob in the chat says, whoever thought getting cable would be simpler and now cheaper in some cases? Like, there are lots of people now who can absolutely get cable TV for less than the cost of YouTube TV.
Oh, yeah. I know I've been making that argument that we're just like on the crossing point. And if YouTube is doing this, do you remember when this happened last time? I think, when was it? Roughly about, I don't know, 16 months ago, something like that. One service updated their prices to go to $50, and everybody updated their prices to go to $50.
So do you think we're going to see Hulu go to $65
soon? I think we're going to see price bumps from the other providers, yes.
Do you think Hulu will go to $65?
I don't know if it will match the same price. I don't know. That's hard to call. But I think we will see another bump because this gives them that latitude. They're like, well, we're just leaving money on the table. Even if we don't go to 65, even if we're cheaper, we are leaving money on the table.
Yeah. So the one thing to keep in mind, if you've been considering this and now you're looking at it and going, yeah, but now it costs more than cable. The feature set in some cases is still better than what you get from cable, especially with YouTube TV. So remember that you don't have to rent a cable box from your provider with YouTube TV. You can watch it, and this is true for pretty much all of these services, but you can watch it on basically every device you own. Your phones, your tablets, your computer, your streaming boxes, it's available everywhere. it's still a streaming service, so you can have multiple profiles. So you can have up to 6 profiles, and you can have 3 concurrent streams, so 3 people watching different things at the same time. And they have unlimited cloud DVR. Now, I don't know if they've got all of the crazy restrictions on their DVR that Sling has, but I have to imagine they have some. But all of that, that's pretty good. Like, that is a nice set of features. And that's, you know, if you're looking at it from a feature perspective, cable can't really compete with some of those things.
Well, yeah, sure. I mean, I think the profile thing is the one thing that it can't really offer. But, you know, if you're a listener to this show, there's a chance that you have Plex or MB or something like that set up, some DVR solution that's kind of irrespective of the content service that you're using. So you could have cable and you could record cable content, maybe with an HD home run that you might still have, as long as it keeps working. Please keep working. Please keep working. And you'd have pretty much all of this, potentially cheaper.
Well, but that's only true if you have a cable card and it's not copy protected.
True. True. Like, I forget that some of these services are still not allowing recording, whereas, well, but yeah. Yeah, yeah, I forgot about that. I don't know. I don't like this new world. This is not the a la carte world that we asked for. You know, all of these pundits, including Jared Newman, who will talk about one of his articles later in the show, but, you know, he's always saying that, look, this is what we asked for. So everybody needs to kind of just understand that this is how the industry is working and adjusting to provide what we're asking for. And if I'm quoting him inaccurately on that, I apologize. But my point is, this is not what I ever asked for. I never asked for the constraints and the restrictions and the specific limitations that this platform technically should not have to provide. But in fact, because of licensing, it does.
Yeah. I mean, you're absolutely swapping out one set of restrictions for another.
Yep.
You know, one of the main reasons so many of us were Windows Media Center users is because of all of the extra functionality that we were able to squeeze out of it by having our DVRs on a computer, because then we could move those videos around and watch them on other devices. And there were add-ons that would allow you to stream outside the home. And back in 2009, there weren't any cable DVRs that were doing things like that.
Right.
But now we're able to watch anything we want, wherever and whenever we want. But now we just have weird restrictions on what can be DVR'd and what can we rewind and fast forward through and craziness like that.
Right.
But the feature set is greatly improved.
Hmm. I don't know if I agree with you there, but I'm not going to belabor the point.
And I don't know exactly where you were going with that. This is what we asked for sort of statement. But if you meant the a la carte thing,
yeah,
I don't think I ever wanted a la carte. And I'm probably in the minority there. I mean, I've definitely heard lots of people saying, I want a la carte, you know, forever. But, you know, it wasn't hard to find reports that listed how much all of these channels cost individually.
Well, right. And in fact, that's what Handsome Rob is saying in the chat right now, is that if we got to the point where it were a la carte, it would be, and I will use his word because it is perfect, outrageously expensive per channel. He's absolutely right. I don't think that I ever wanted a la carte either, because I'm the kind of person who wants options. I want everything. I want to be able to just pick from what's out there. But many, many people wanted a la carte, and this is not that. We did not get there.
No, no. And that is where you and I are kind of opposite. Like, if you told me build a bundle, like, I kind of like this model better, but no one's talking about this because I don't think it's a possibility. Imagine if you could go to YouTube TV and they would say, pick any 15 channels you want and we'll sell it to you for $25 a month. I could totally do that. I could absolutely do that because there's like 8 channels I want. That's all I care about. It's mostly sports stuff, maybe a little bit of news. And then HGTV and Food Network for Jen and the girls. And that's it. Like, that is all we need. But that sort of option is also never going to happen because of these bundles that kind of have to be forced in there. You know, if I want ESPN and NBC Sports, I'm going to get a bunch of extra stuff too.
Right.
All right, so let's move on to another disappointing price increase, but this one is not nearly as outrageous.
Right, but, well, yeah, kind of. Speaking of ESPN.
Yeah, so ESPN Plus is going up. I didn't do the math on what the percentage here is.
It's 20%. It's a 20% increase.
Yeah, I guess it is. So it's going from $4.99 a month to $5.99 a month, and yeah, 20%'s a lot as a percentage, but when it's going up by a dollar, it's not that big of a deal.
Right. Yeah.
So this isn't happening yet. It happens in August. They're also, and also, just to be clear, a bunch of this is from like leaked documents that The Verge got. This hasn't actually been announced yet. So the annual price supposedly isn't going to change. So it's going to stay at $49.99 a year, which is nice. Existing subscribers will keep the $4.99 price for the next year. That's really nice. But so the other nice thing is that it sounds like the bundle, the really, really cool bundle that I love, that is like the perfect bundle for me, that's Hulu. ESPN Plus with Hulu and Disney Plus.
Yeah.
The price of that bundle is not changing either.
How?
I don't know.
That makes no sense at all.
I don't know. Maybe it will later. Oh, well, I mean, it definitely will later, but we don't know when. So that's good news. The thing that's super weird about all of this is the timing. There aren't any sports to watch.
Yeah.
So, for me, like I said, it's not a huge deal because I've got the bundle, but it's a weird time to be increasing the cost of watching sports when the only sports to watch right now are marble racing. Like, come on.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't get it. This one really infuriates me. I am a big, huge fan, advocate, stockholder, timeshare owner of the Disney company, but I just don't get this. This is the wrong, it's the wrong time for many reasons. It's the wrong time because there aren't sports. It's the wrong time because people don't necessarily have extra money to put out on something like this. And it's the wrong time just because it looks bad as Disney's kind of struggling, trying to figure out how to make their business models work today. Like, we make an enormous amount of money from our parks and entertainment services that people aren't using right now. Oh, okay, well, let's charge more for sports. Oh, right, well, there aren't any. That's okay. It's only a dollar. It seems sleazy, and I don't like that look on Disney.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, so in the chat right now, we've got a bunch of people in the chat who are listing what channels could cover their viewing. I kind of want to hear from our listeners. If you could only have 10 channels, I want to know, could you have just 10 channels and still cover everybody in your house with 10 channels? If so, I want to hear what they are. And if you're a sports fan, especially like college football, don't forget that if you're watching college football on cable TV, you're doing it across like 15 channels right now, potentially, because it is on so many different networks. So if you're like, oh, well, all we're watching right now is HGTV and CNN. Well, don't forget about those sports that would theoretically come back someday. So let me know your list of 10 channels. Can you do it? And what would they be?
I think that's really interesting. And the only thing that makes that possible for me, frankly, is Hulu.
Mm.
Like the fact that I can go after the fact and watch anything on more or less anything that was on Fox or NBC or ABC a day later, I can live with that.
Right. Yeah, I'm in the same boat for sure. All right, let's move on to another sad story before we get on to some happier stories.
Yeah, and this one really annoys me because this is a service that I have and that I use, and hopefully it's not going to impact me in the short term. That is that AT&T is basically killing its inexpensive TV bundle that it offered for cord cutters. Now, to be honest about this, the only reason AT&T even did this was so that they could get approval for the merger. Like, this is something that they created to satisfy the scrutiny that they were under when they wanted to merge with Warner. They're like, oh no, we're going to make our, you know, we're going to make content available just through streaming too. No problem. We'll offer this. And so they created this service called AT&T Watch TV. One of the, I think, four different TV services that you can get from AT&T right now. Well, they are killing this one. And the first death knell, if you will, is that you can no longer subscribe to it. This was a nice service. It was, I think, 30-some channels. And I talked about using this when I was at the beach. I had my Fire TV with me. I just plugged it into the TV down there. I had all the channels that I wanted to watch through this. It was really nice. This is how I get my HBO. I get my HBO. And as a result of that, I get my HBO Max through AT&T Watch TV because I get it as a free add-on to my mobile service that I have with them. No longer.
I thought this service was mobile only.
No. It's available on TVs. It's available on Roku. It is pretty widely available, and it counts as a provider. And that's the important thing for stuff like HBO.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Yeah. So if you're already in, you're okay for now. They haven't talked about when or if they are going to stop making it available for existing subscribers, but they are not taking any new subscribers to this, and they are not offering this as part of their bundle for their mobile customers anymore. So that really kind of sucks, because it just reinforces that this was nothing but kind of an, I would might argue, unethical business ploy to get through the mergers and acquisition process.
Very likely. Very likely.
Yeah.
Okay, let's move on to some positive news.
Oh, finally.
I think. This is maybe in the middle, because I think you're going to be annoyed by this, but I'm curious. So Amazon is jumping on board like so many other video services and offering a service of their own that will allow you to watch things from Amazon Prime Videos with your friends at the same time. So you can both sit down and watch Jack Ryan together. I've actually joked with Jen that Richard and I should do this at some point, and I should just be as annoying as humanly possible. Because Richard hates this idea.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I wonder if you hate this one as much, because the video is synced up. So you and I are watching at the exact same time, but there's not video chat or even audio chat. It's like watching this podcast. You get the video on most of the screen and you get a text chat room on the side of the screen. You can invite up to 100 people at once. That's a crazy amount of people. The only real limitations are they obviously have to be Amazon Prime Video subscribers, and they have to be in the United States. Other than that, the other major limitation, but it kind of makes sense because of the chat functionality, is it's desktop only. You're not going to do this on your Fire TV or your Xbox or something like that.
Yeah, but what about like a tablet or something? It doesn't work on the your tablet? I'm kind of surprised by that.
I guess not.
Huh. Well, I'm never going to use it because I never watch TV on my desktop. Well, that's not true. I use the HD Home Run app to watch the news occasionally in the corner while I'm doing other work. But I don't intentionally sit down at my computer to watch TV.
And yeah, and I think that is the weird part of this. Yeah. Like, I don't think a lot of people sit down at a computer to watch, especially long-form TV. Like, sure, they're going to sit down at a computer and watch some YouTube videos, but most people don't even have desktop computers in their houses anymore.
Yeah, that's a good point. This is like Brian Brushwood's favorite way to watch television, is to sit in front of his computer screen and watch it there. And I just don't get that. I don't get that at all.
Doesn't he have a couch in there and he uses a TV as his computer monitor?
Oh, you mean, does he have a couch in his office?
Yeah.
He may, but I don't think that, like, he's talking about sitting at his desk and watching stuff. You know, the exception being when they're watching something as a family. But if he's watching something himself, he doesn't go and watch it on the TV. He sits at his desk and watches it. I just don't get that at all.
Yeah, I do that for sports sometimes, where I can put a hockey game in a window in a corner and get some other work
done.
But
that's right. But that's, I feel like that's different because you're doing something and the video is kind of ancillary.
Right.
It's kind of like you walking around your house with your tablet while you're watching some races.
Exactly. Man, it's like we've been doing this for years together. Yeah, I wouldn't do that with Jack Ryan. I can do that with a hockey game because I don't have to be paying super close attention every single second. You don't have to do that with any sports because if you miss anything, they show you a replay of it 8 times. So it totally works. I'd be curious to try this, though. You know, maybe this would get me to watch more TV. If you would watch with me, Richard, maybe I would actually watch more TV.
I think Xbox has a similar feature that they're coming out with if they haven't already. So we may want to just try that instead because there's no way I'm sitting at my desk to watch something. But I will totally sit on my sofa and try this out with you and your family if you want to invite them to the party.
There you go. Maybe we should try that. Or it might be insane and chaos and not go well. Well, if you do like Amazon Prime Video and you're really, really invested in the Microsoft ecosystem, like to the point of having a Windows tablet, this next story is going to make you pretty happy. For what seems like, I don't know, 5 years too late, Amazon is finally bringing their Amazon Prime Video app to the Microsoft Store. And what that means is you've got a Windows app for your PC that allows you to watch and download Amazon Prime videos. And that's way better than using the browser when you're on a tablet. I've done it. Like I did walk around my house with a Surface watching Amazon videos in a browser. And it sucks because that's not an experience that's designed for touch and stuff. Right. This is actually going to work a lot better. So I'm excited that they're doing it. I just don't know how many people still need this.
Well, this isn't also just limited to touch devices or portable devices. You could absolutely use this on your desktop TV. And again, I'll go back to the fact that Brian is probably going to love this because Amazon is his video provider of choice and sitting at his Windows computer is his preferred way of watching anything on TV. So,
sure, but the app, like just from a straight up PC usage, what do you get out of this that you didn't get out of just using the web browser?
That you don't have to deal with Amazon.com to get to your videos.
Okay, that's valid.
Right? It's an actual video centric application experience.
Yeah, that's valid. All right, last real quick little story. The TiVo Stream 4K, we've talked about it a lot over the last month and a half because it came out in late May. And when it came out, they said the price was going to be a special offer of $49.99, and then it would jump to $69.99, right. So $20 more.
And they didn't give any indication of how long that period would be. So imagine our surprise when, in the middle of a pandemic, when people don't want to spend money, it comes out in May, and they say, oh, yeah, and it's going to go to normal price at the end of May. What?
Yeah, which was like 5 days after it came out or something like that.
Well, 5 days after I got it, I think.
Right. It was less than 2 weeks after it came out, for
sure.
Was it
really? Wow. Okay.
Yeah. They extended it. They've extended this special offer time period yet again. It will now be valid through July 30th or while supplies last.
Yeah. And to be clear, I don't know that we can really qualify that they extended it again. What they did before was they extended it without saying that they were extending it. Now they're actually giving us a day where they're saying, okay, if we don't run out of them, this will be good through the end of July.
So let me go super dark place for a second.
It's not selling well.
Well, no, darker than that.
Ooh.
While supplies last, like, have they given up on this device? Is it already on clearance? Is that what this is?
Wow, that is really dark. I'm not thinking it's that bad.
I don't think it's that bad either.
And I'm not thinking it's that bad because we already kind of have reason to believe that there's another update coming that's going to fix the always-on HDR problem, right? There were some news articles about that, although I would argue that that's not news. It's simply remembering that they said that they'll fix that at some point. But so I know that this is an iterative product. They were very clear. When I spoke with the product manager for this at CES, he was very clear that they are iterating on this and they will continue to improve it over time. The problem that they're facing right now is that it has so many shortcomings and so many problems, and it hit at a time when, like, services are changing dramatically. The HBO thing, like, the timing of that couldn't have been worse.
Yeah, that was awful for them.
They bundled in HBO Now as one of the providers. HBO Now isn't going to exist at the end of the month.
Right.
Right? So, like, it's just, they need to invest in this platform to make it work, and I hope that they will. Spoilers, when we talk about what's going on in my entertainment center, we're not talking about the TiVo stream at all.
Ruh-roh. I'm still not using it in my living room yet either. That probably has more to do with me forgetting that it's hooked up to one of my computer monitors in my office and than anything else. But I'm still concerned that I'm not going to be able to control it with my Harmony.
Yep.
And which would make it a non-starter.
Right. Exactly. I think you can't. You have to use their remote, which means you have to rely on HDMI CEC, which is a freaking mess. All right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, you said that was the last story, but it's not really the last story because I wanted to throw something in here. You know, we used to talk about Microsoft stuff on this show almost exclusively.
Mm-hmm.
And just this past week, there was a news story that Microsoft is going to permanently close its retail stores. And I thought this was worth mentioning. It doesn't necessarily affect the audience of this show as we've now defined it so much, but I think the listeners who have been with us for a while will totally appreciate the significance of this. This was Microsoft really trying to reach out to consumers directly and trying to show that they offered products not just for the business, but for consumers to use at home. Clearly, there's just no doubt that this was a response to Apple's extremely successful move into retail, but it had its own tenor, it had its own feel, And it's something that I think probably this community has enjoyed over the years. I loved going into the Microsoft stores. They're fun. You get to play with different laptops and computers and play with the different Xbox things that they had. You got to even see the Xbox previews before they were even available to the public, and it's not going to exist anymore. Now, the one exception, and I say one, but I think there are three, if I remember correctly, is that their experience centers are going to stay open. And so, for lack of a better way of describing it, those are their major flagship properties, like New York City on Fifth Avenue, like what they have at Redmond, and like the store that they have in London. Those are not closing. They may change quite a bit, but those are not closing. But 83 retail stores are closing. It's sad. And I suspect that it's largely, you know, it was probably triggered, that I would say the straw was probably the pandemic.
Yeah. I didn't realize they had 83 stores. And I don't say that to slam them, but when we did talk about this a lot, it took them a long time to expand. And yeah. I don't feel like, I mean, yes, I live in a flyover state of Ohio, I guess, but I don't feel like I live in the middle of friggin' nowhere. And I would have to drive an hour and a half at least to get to a Microsoft store from where I am. In 15 minutes, I can be at an Apple store.
Right. Right. Yeah, I mean...
But they were nice. They were really nice.
There's not a Microsoft store where I am outside of DC itself, but there was one in the Pentagon City Mall. And so, you know, if I live downtown, that would be fairly easy for me to get to.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And of course, going to the Microsoft store was kind of part of the thing when we went to the Home Server Show meetups each year.
Yep, that was always a fun part of it.
Yep. So anyway, just wanted to pay some homage there because I think it's sad. It's unfortunate. I'm, as a Microsoft stock owner, I think it makes sense and I'm glad they're doing it. But this is something I will look back on very fondly.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So that is it for the news segment of the show. Before we get into what's going on in our entertainment centers, we just want to ask, if you like this show, please share it with a friend. Let someone else know about this show who might be interested in all of this technology stuff that we like to cover. Maybe you've got some friends interested in a new TV for this year. Well, now you've got a very specific episode to point them at. As we talked about those new Vizio TV sets at the beginning, if you've got people looking at new gaming consoles in the fall, we're going to have plenty of information about all those coming up as we get more details from Sony and Microsoft. So share on social, share in person, no matter how you do it, we appreciate it. So Richard, what's going on in your entertainment center?
I'm going to give a quick update on my Synology situation because I've been spending a lot of time over the last few days moving, like doing major file moves from my old iMac, which I'm retiring. I actually traded in my iMac to as credit on the new MacBook Pro that I bought for work. So I need to get everything off of it. And Josh, I don't know what this process is like for you or how you approach this, but I am terrible at this. Pretty much every time I move to a computer, I end up creating a new old computer folder that has all of my subfolders from my user account from the last computer. And then when I go to the next computer, I have another old computer folder, and you just have stuff strewn out all over the friggin' place.
Yep. That's exactly how I do it on over here in Windows land.
Well, yeah. So I have decided that I'm going to try and be a little bit more organized in this and try to at least bin stuff properly where it belongs. So I'm trying to get stuff that's photos and get it into the photos section a mice analogy, and video into the video section. And then for documents, I'm putting them in an archives folder, and I have to figure that out, because at some point I need to figure out how I combine all of my archives of my different computers. Now, the good news is that the Synology comes with a really good utility to find file duplicates. So I should be able to just merge stuff after I've eliminated the duplicates between the different folders that I have. So we'll see. I'll report back on that in a while. But in the meantime, I'm just trying to get everything off of the different computers. And I'm also getting rid of my old work laptop. So I'm adding that into the mix too. Now, as I've been doing this, I mentioned photos. I've been trying to figure out what to use for cataloging my photos. I used to use Google Picasa. Picasa was an amazing program that Google acquired to manage photo libraries. It did non-destructive edits that it stored in literally .ini files in the folders where your images existed. So it didn't mess with the images at all. And then it let you review all of that stuff and look through anything and export and all that stuff through Picasa. Well, Picasa is a 32-bit app, and they stopped supporting it in 2016 when they pushed everybody to Google Photos. So guess what the Mac isn't anymore? 32-bit. And so literally within the last 24 hours, I decided, all right, I can't stand it. I have tried to use the DiskStation solution for photos. I'm not entirely sold on it. In the meantime, I'm just going back to Picasa. So I installed a VM of the old version of Mac on my Mac using Parallels so that I can still run Picasa.
That's kind of ridiculous.
It is entirely ridiculous. Meanwhile, Tony in the chat is saying, yep, he still uses Picasa.
It's probably on a Windows machine.
Maybe. But same issue. You're going to eventually run into a compatibility issue unless, and I don't know, maybe does Windows 10 just allow you to run old 32-bit apps kind of in a shell?
Oh, yeah. No. Yeah, you can run 32-bit apps all you want.
All right.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if you could run 16-bit apps on Windows 10. I mean, Microsoft doesn't leave anybody behind. That's one of the problems with Windows, right?
I was going to say, I hope you're not going to present that as a benefit, because
I mean, it's kind of
it's
a
liability for Microsoft.
But it does end up also being a liability, yes.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, I want to hear from our audience if there are other solutions out there that can fit the bill specifically on the Mac. Like, I'm not going to run, if I'm running a Mac VM on my Mac to use Picasa, I'm not going to consider using a Windows program through a VM as an alternative, right? So,
yeah, that's not really better.
Right. If you know of a server-based or a local Mac program that is similarly good for managing, cataloging, and working with your photos. It even did editing. I would love to know what that is. I looked into, I think I mentioned this in a past episode, I looked into AC/DC, and they insisted that I create an account and log into the account just to be able to let the app launch. And I'm like, the whole thing is I don't want the cloud on this. I just want this locally. So why am I going to trust that you're not going to be somehow getting data off of my images if you require me to log in? Like, what's the point of that? So I'm looking for an alternative. If anybody has any suggestions, I would love to know, because this is going to be janky running Mojave for a while. We'll see how it goes. All right. Well, as far as what I've been watching, I mentioned I have not been watching anything on the TiVo stream. And I am so fed up with the mess that it creates with my CEC that I am about a weekend away from just taking it off the entertainment center entirely, because I cannot start my entertainment center with my regular Harmony remote and have it go to the thing that I requested properly, because my Fire TV and my Apple TV and my Roku are all fighting to be the app that gets attention through CEC.
Yeah, that's frustrating. Yeah. Like, I think where the Fire, sorry, not the Fire TV, the TiVo Stream 4K works well is it's going to be the only device on this particular TV over here.
Right. Exactly. And that's not my scenario. So maybe it ends up on the bedroom TV.
Yeah, that would be great for that sort of thing.
Right.
And it, like, we're not really slamming the TiVo Stream 4K here, because the TiVo Stream 4K is absolutely capable of being the only device on a TV for lots of people and in lots of situations.
Absolutely. Well, except for the fact that you have to live with Sling TV and its ridiculous limitations on what you can rewind and what you can't, but that's a different issue.
You don't have to, because it's still an Android TV player. If you want to do Hulu with live TV or YouTube TV, all of that's available there too.
Right. But the benefit of using TiVo as your device is that you're getting that integrated experience, right?
Right.
So,
right.
All right. Well, as far as stuff that I've been watching, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. continues to be really good. And I am caught up on that entirely. I have about 3 episodes left on Jack Ryan. I watched a little bit more of The Politician. I have watched a couple more episodes of Archer. And this weekend, we watched 2 movies. Well, I watched one and we watched one. So this is Pride Month. I haven't watched any LGBT movies at all. And I thought, you know what? I should watch something. Like, I feel like I should watch something. And I ended up watching Love, Simon, which was really cute. I thought it was a nice movie. And then Edward and I ended up watching Troop Zero, which is an Amazon original. And it was great. It was so good. Very funny, but with serious themes. And it's something that I would thoroughly recommend to anybody. I just thought it was delightful. I think it would be a good family movie too. Although there are a couple words in there, so you may need to look at the age limits there. And then Hulu had, and this is really why I watched Love, Simon, was that Hulu started a series called Love, Victor that is a spin-off series of the movie Love, Simon. And I watched that. It was just like 8 episodes or something like that. And they're half hour episodes, and just tore through that really quickly. Again, just kind of like a teenager's coming of age story, trying to figure out what's going on with his life. So it was good.
Cool. All right. Well, my list is very, very short.
As usual.
Yeah, it was a very busy week. So nothing that I did watch, although we're definitely going to be watching Hamilton this weekend. So we will have that to talk about next week. Very, very excited about that.
Yeah, I'll be, if I didn't mention it before, I'll be talking about Hamilton a little bit too.
You did not mention that.
Oh, well, maybe I'll bring that up later.
Yeah, maybe you should. So this is another place where we could use a little bit of feedback. I've heard some people say that if you have not seen the musical of Hamilton, that you should listen to the soundtrack prior to watching this. So that you don't have to focus so much on understanding all of the words of the songs to get the story. Mm. But that feels like spoiler territory, right? Like, that feels like reading the script for a movie before you watch it. So I would love to hear what other people think. You know, what's your advice for going into a musical you've never seen before? Should you listen to the soundtrack first or not?
Yeah, and reply quickly, because by the day that this episode of the show comes out, I think we'll have basically 2 days until it's time to watch Hamilton.
Yeah, Hamilton comes out on the 4th.
Actually, one day. It comes out on the 3rd.
Oh, it's the 3rd?
Yeah.
Yeah, we're gonna need fast responses. Okay. It's your job. All right. So nothing watched in terms of video games. A couple of games of NHL, and NHL has turned into it's the weekend and everybody's kind of on their own during the middle of the day, and I'm just eating a quick lunch by myself. So I'm gonna play a video game while I eat. And you would think that a hockey game would not be good for that, but there are so many loading screens and stuff. And then, you know, the big pauses at the intermissions and all of that stuff. It actually gives you a lot of time to eat while you play a game of NHL. So a little bit of NHL over the last week and a lot of Call of Duty, partly because I really like Call of Duty and because, you know, I play typically once a week with a group of coworkers. We've been playing games together for years. We always like to do 4-player games together if we can. And Call of Duty brought back the 4-player version of one of their Battle Royale mods called Plunder. They mess with it all the time. Like for weeks, it was only available as 2-player groups or as 3-player groups. And it's like, well, if we can't all play, then we're not going to play this game right now. Well, last weekend, they finally made it all 4 people. So in addition to me just playing Call of Duty multiplayer on my own or with 1 or 2 other friends, I also played a lot of the Plunder mode with that group from work. So that's it for me on the gaming side. I did finish that book, Throne of Glass. This is the one that Jen really wanted me to read, and it was good. Can't remember if I finished that last week for last week's show. Got caught up on all my podcasts, listened to a couple of other audiobooks. Like, I don't remember their names. One of them was like a habit-based book, more of like leadership kind of skills kind of book that people probably don't care about. And another like churchy book, like I'm really involved in leading worship, so like a book about that sort of stuff. Finished both of those. They were both short. And then I think yesterday started on the next book in this Throne of Glass series that Jen wanted me to read. The second book is called Crown of Midnight. It's good. It's really good. I'm liking it a lot. She told me from the very beginning, she's like, my favorite character in this series, or one of her favorites, is a character named Mort. I'm like, okay, so when am I going to meet this Mort guy? And she's like, well, I think it's in book one. It wasn't. It was in book two. And I was like, are you sure? And I'm asking her some questions, and she's giving me like super, super vague answers about this Mort character. And she just wouldn't tell me anything. Well, I met Mort today in this book, and it's an interesting character. I'm not going to say anything else. If you're interested in fantasy books, especially about assassins and stuff, because that's primarily what this is, you should check out this Throne of Glass series. It's pretty cool. And when you get to book two and you meet Mort, you're going to go, what? That's Mort? Okay. Yeah, it's cool. So that's it for me. Definitely be talking about Hamilton come next week.
So talking about Hamilton, worth mentioning that I am going to be getting back together with my buddies from Let's Talk About Thrones, and we're going to do a one-time special called Let's Talk About Hamilton. So that's with Anthony Lemos and Jenny Jacobson, and we are going to be recording this, I think, actually on the 4th.
Oh, man.
So that it's out by the 5th. We're going to try and get this out as quickly as possible. And again, it's the same sort of thing. Like, I've never seen it. And Anthony is obsessed with the music of it, but he hasn't seen the music, or he hasn't seen the musical itself, I don't believe. And then Jenny has seen it and knows the score and everything else. So it's going to be that whole three, like that triangle of 3 completely different perspectives on it again. And I'm really looking forward to this. I think it's going to be fun.
So how are people going to find this? Is this a brand new show and a brand new feed, or is this going to be a little bit easier for them?
So for now, we are going to throw it into the Let's Talk About Thrones feed, and we are renaming temporarily. We're going to be renaming it to the Let's Not Talk About Thrones. And then we are going to actually create a separate Let's Not Talk About Thrones feed, which will have occasional collaborations with the three of us talking about random stuff.
Cool. That's fun.
It should be fun.
All right. Well, I will have to give that a listen after I watch Hamilton this weekend.
There you go.
Cool. All right. Well, remember, you all, I gave all of you listeners a lot of homework. I want your 10 channels that you would put in your favorite streaming TV package. And I need to know if I should be listening to the soundtrack for Hamilton. So how are you going to tell me all of these things? Well, there's a bunch of ways you can tell me. We're on Twitter. Richard's at Richard Gunther. I'm at Josh Pollard. The website's at DigiMediaZone. We've got our email address. We're on Facebook. We're on Instagram. All of that stuff. Just go over to the website, thedigitalmediazone.com. It's all right there. You can find all of it, including a contact form in case you don't want to type our ridiculously long email addresses. So check all of that out over at the website and, of course, all of the show notes there. And while you're there, if you're for some crazy reason not already subscribed to our other podcast, you'll want to subscribe to Home On, which is Richard's other show where he talks about smart home stuff. So, Richard, what's going on with Home On?
Yeah, so our next episode, just recorded this week, is with Chris Young, the host of the HomeKit Geek YouTube channel. We talk about the latest news, and then we dive into what's going on with improvements to HomeKit as announced at WWDC. So, fun episode, and he and I have never really had a chance to interact live before, so we had a good time. I think people will enjoy this one.
Cool. All right. And then come back here, right here, the website, thedigitalmediazone.com/live, because we do this show live on Tuesday nights at 8:30 PM Eastern, usually. And maybe by next week, we're going to be using Twitch instead of Mixer for that, since we don't have much time to switch over before Mixer dies, like we talked about last week. So that's going to do it for episode 525. He's Richard Gunther, and I'm Josh Pollard. Thanks for listening to Entertainment 2.0. Adios.
Goodbye.